Stå opp på Radio Rock med Olav, Anne og Henrik.
Hver morgen fra 6 til 10 leverer vi Stå opp Norges minst proffe morgenprogram, men også kanskje det morsomste. Vi vil at Radio Rock-lytterne skal få den best mulige starten på dagen med fjas og tull og ekte rock.
Ja, men det er jo ikke sikkert at det passer akkurat deg å starte dagen slik, eller akkurat på det tidspunktet.
Så, hvis du gikk glipp av Stå opp på Radio Rock, kan du alltid høre Stå opp podcast akkurat når og hvor du vil.
Så går ikke du glipp av ett eneste middelmådig minutt.
Stå opp hver morgen på Radio Rock, eller når du vil, overalt der du hører podcast.
En podcast fra Podplay.
We're quite big rivals back in the day, I suppose, musically. You know, we were both neck and neck in the charts. So yeah, it was a good time, really.
Gammal Maiden.
Over to klokka, og har avtale nå med Biff fra Saxon, et band jeg ikke har kjempestort forhold til. Hørte meg litt opp nå, og så det jækla mye tøfter. Det det som så bra med å ha den jobben her. Får liksom tida til å sette på jobb og høre på musik som jeg burde ha hørt på for 40 år siden, så klart. Det blir spennende, da. Jeg aner ikke hvilken type det her jeg har lest meg litt opp på den, og skikkelig sånn industri, ja, typisk brittisk arbeiderklasse kar som ble metal-vokalist. Litt sånn Ozzy Osbourne egentlig, bare litt annerledes.
Gammal Maiden med Torkel Torsvik.
Biff Byford. Welcome to Radio Rock and the podcast Gammal Maiden.
Yeah, it's nice to be there.
And congratulations. First of all, with the single Hell, Fire and Damnation, I think it's so powerful and your vocals are so good. You will soon turn 73 years old and your voice is so good, powerful. How do you keep it like that?
Don't know really. Just, I mean, I do use it a lot. You know, I do sing a lot, so I suppose my voice gets a lots of exercise. So, I mean, I don't really, I don't really drink sort of neat hard liquor, and I don't really take drugs. So, you know, I stopped smoking about 30 years ago. So, I think it all helps really to keep your voice in good condition. You know.
I'm so impressed with all you guys from that era, like British bands, Rob Halford and Bruce Dickinson. You're keeping in shape, I think.
Yeah, trying to keep in shape. Yeah, definitely.
Where are you right now?
Right now, I'm in Cheshire right now, actually.
Okay, and what are you doing there?
Oh, just moving some stuff around for my wife, really.
Everyday
life.
I'm in
a day off music and helping with the day to day running.
Oh, thank you so much for taking your time to speak with
me. No problem. Everything's good.
And congratulations also with your 24th album, Hellfire and Damnation. And that's also the title of this single. Tell me about the lyrics. I read somewhere that those three words, you picked it up in your childhood or something, hellfire and damnation.
My dad used to use that. I mean, it's still used in north of England. You know, it's a bit like if you can't get something to work or you're a little bit upset with something, then you will say hellfire and damnation. This car is useless. But I don't usually use it. But, my wife sometimes says it, actually. She's from the Midlands. So, yeah, it's an old English. Maybe it's a Viking saying. I don't know. It's an old English saying. It's got a bit of religious overtones, you know what I mean?
So you got that expression a lot from your dad. I read he was
from my family. Yeah.
Yeah. Your dad was.
Yeah, I mean, I've had the title in my. I have a list of song titles that I add something to it. You know, every time I get a good idea or a bad idea, I put it in my book. You know, and Hellfire Damnation has been in there for quite some time. I just never really had a guitar riff I could make it work with until Brian Tatler came up with this great guitar riff. So I put the two together and arranged it, wrote the lyrics, did the melodies, and turned out pretty good, really.
Yeah. And there's some more nostalgia in this album, like the song Pirates of the Airwaves. Tell me about this one.
Yeah. Well, when I was 13 years old, 14 years old, there was no really rock pop music radio in England. The BBC refused to play any sort of music that young people thought, you know, they thought it would subvert the youth. And so they didn't play a lot of music, and the station closed at 10 o'clock at night. So we started listening to these pirate radios. I mean, Radio Caroline was in the North Sea. And and Luxembourg was obviously, you know, near Belgium, and they transmitted everything into England. So we used to listen to this late at night in bed under the covers. So, that's what the story's about.
Yeah, I saw a movie, that
launched all the swinging 60s, you know, all the miniskirts and all that sort of, you know, music from those days, the pop music, Rolling Stones and the Kinks and all that. It was all played on the pirate radio stations first.
Mm-hmm. I think I saw a movie about some radio channels on platforms in the North Sea there.
Yeah, there is a film. I don't know what it's called there. I think it's called The Boat That Rocked.
Yeah, something like that.
In America and UK. I think different places have different titles.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so yeah, it's good.
My podcast is about nostalgia and the inspirations, influences in your childhood that made you a rocker. can you remember the first moment you thought, I want to do this, I want to play rock music?
Probably around that same time, really. That sort of, when I was 12, you know, 13, 14. I was a singer. I was singing in the choir at school. So I knew I could sing, you know, from an early age. But I really wanted to play guitar. That's what I really wanted to do. So I learned, my dad bought me a guitar, and I learned to play it. And from there, I went to bass guitar. And then from there, I went to singing and playing bass guitar. So all that early stuff. I remember learning Paint It Black on the guitar, you know. Da, 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 da. I see a red door and I want it painted black. No colors anymore. Basically copying the bands of the day, really. Mm-hmm. Learning their songs and riffs.
Yeah,
I remember learning Hang On Snoopy by the McCoys on guitar. That was one of the first things I learned.
You've done some really good cover versions. The Stones song you mentioned there. So the Rolling Stones were some of the first bands that you listened to when you wanted to play rock.
Yeah, I think the Beatles were everywhere. But I really wanted something a bit wilder. So Rolling Stones, Kinks, Pretty Things, a lot of those sort of late 60s, late 60s bands, I really liked them. Mm-hmm. You know, there was a lot of sort of prog rocky stuff around as well, like Procol Harum and You know, Emerson, Lake and Palmer was all around at that time. So there was a huge, sort of massive amount of music around that we could listen to.
What made me interested in metal music was actually some lyrics about historical happenings. And in this album, you got lots of it, like Kublai Khan, Marie Antoinette, and Battle of Hastings. So you're quite interested in history yourself.
Yeah, I think if you listen to all our albums, you know, especially the early stuff, you know, at the '80s, there's always been a history running through my lyrics, you know, in Dallas 1 PM and songs like this. So, yeah, always more a lot of history. I think the last maybe two albums, you know, I mean, Thunderbolt is about Greek mythology, which in a sense is history. So, yeah, I'm always interested in history. And, you know, when you're sort of 70 odd and the band's been together for, you know, making albums for 40 odd years, you can't really sing about sex, drugs, and rock and roll anymore. You know, you gotta sort of be a little bit more intellectual, I think.
Yeah, and you've been
through
the huge a travel from the 70s in your band and 24 albums. How do you make an album today compared to before? Do you still go to the rehearsal space and jam?
Yeah, it's pretty much the same, actually. Pretty much the same. We sort of, you know, when the songs are sort of, I mean, I'll get the songs up to like being, you know, very up to a level where I've got, you know, the melodies and the lyrics on there and the arrangements. And then we'll rehearse them all in a room together. And then we'll do the fine points, you know, fine tune everything. Put in a little bit here, take a little bit out there. Trying to make the perfect song, you know, which you can never do. But yeah, so we rehearsed on this album. We rented a hotel with a cinema in some small village in Germany, and we stayed there. That was our base through the summer, and we made the album like that. Really, we did the we rehearsed the song, did the bass and drums straight away, a couple of guy guitars, then went to my studio in England and did all the guitars and the vocals there, then went down to Andy Snips and finished it off there. So it was all pretty much, all put it together really smoothly, actually. Went really well. We were all very surprised. Obviously, somebody looking down on us, making it work, I think.
Yeah. And the sound, the production on this first single, especially, it's so good. Have you got any reactions from the fans or, like the music business from it?
I think the sound, it's a monster sound, actually. I mean, I think Andy's got a great, I think it's probably the best album Andy's done, actually, sound-wise. Because it's very raw and open. There's a lot of depth to the sound. And I think because we only use like two or three guitar tracks, I think it may be, I mean, what I did is when I was doing guitar, we concentrated on getting a fantastic sound. And then, you know, took it from there, really. So I think, you know, the boys, you know, the Nibs and Brian and Doug, I really think that they, you know, really got dug in and sort of played excellent, actually. I think most everything's one take, one or two takes all the way through. So there's not a lot of overdubbing and looping and, you know, the sort of things you do now with Pro Tools. So it's pretty a raw album, really, as far as the playing goes.
Yeah, the sound is amazing. And the opening, too, with this actor. I like the theatrical sound. He's called Brian Blessed. And I
googled, Brian Blessed, yeah.
Yeah, Blessed. Okay. I googled him and I saw his face and, I've seen this guy. But how did you collaborate with him?
Well, we know him. We've known him for some time.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, he introduced us on stage a couple of times at festivals. when he's been hanging around. He's a bit of a rock fan, you know, so he's an actor that likes to hang out with rock stars. So, I mean, a lot of people know him. But yeah, I sent him a text message and said, I've got this piece of, you know, a piece of music called The Prophecy. I want you to do some words for me. So if I write some words, will you speak them for me? So he said, yeah, I will. So that's good, really. Yeah. So we did really, really lucky getting him, I suppose.
Yeah, it sounds like a Gandalf or something. Really good voice.
Yeah, there. I think it's a very 80s thing as well to put that on the beginning of an album.
Yeah.
I don't think many people have done it for quite a long time. I just think it explains it also explains what the song's about. You know, so I think it works really well.
Yeah. I'm 45 years old. I'm half your age, so to speak, because I came to age around 1990 and started listening to Maiden, No Prayer for the Dying, and also you guys, you were pouring out albums in the beginning of the 90s. But how did you experience the 90s with the grunge movement and everything?
It was a little bit more difficult than it was in the 80s, really. But I just think we just kept trying to make great albums, really. I think that's what kept us going, you know, trying to make great albums. And some of the 90s albums were actually great, you know. Yeah, I mean, Metalhead and Inner Sanctum, some good albums there. I just think kept making great albums, kept touring, and, you know, the fans really stayed by us. And it's obviously more popular now. Again,
yeah.
But yeah, I think all those bands like Priest and Maiden and Motorhead and Whitesnake and people, we all kept releasing albums, you know, and touring. And pretty soon, I think people respected us for that. And it's come around full circle now.
Oh, yeah, we respect you for that, I'll tell you. And of course, I start buying lots of music from the 80s and 70s, and I discovered this movement you had called the New Wave of British Heavy Metal, and always wondered, did you guys know that you were part of a wave? That, yeah, let's make a wave, or did it just happen?
No, I don't think so. We were just trying to, but we just wanted to be, you know, successful. I think that was that was our motivation. We wanted to be like the bands we used to go and see, you know. So we wanted to be the next Deep Purple or the next Black Sabbath or the next, you know, whatever, really. You know, that was our goal. And I suppose, you know, it happened for us. And in the 80s, really, we were very lucky to be around with the right songs. You know, there were some great, our contemporaries were great, you know, Maiden were great. Their first album was Killer. So it was a great time, really. But I don't think we thought we were in a wave. I think that was a journalistic thing that they called us that because, you know, the Purple Sabbath, those days were all in the 70s. And then the punk thing came along. So I think they just came up with that title because we were a little bit different than the bands before.
Yeah.
So I think that's really where that comes from. So, yeah. But no, we didn't really. I mean, we used to meet a lot of bands out on the road and in restaurants on the motorway, you know. I don't think we were really, you know, aware what was happening really behind the scenes, you know.
Just happened.
Yeah.
I mentioned this podcast. It's called Gammal Maiden because that was my first big crush when I was 12 years old. And I got these regular questions. Every guest has to answer it. And do you remember the first time you met or heard Iron Maiden?
Yeah, I think the first time we met Iron Maiden was probably 1979 at Manchester University.
Oh.
It was Iron Maiden, Saxon and a band called Nuts, who were a sort of old, sort of older fashioned blues band. And I remember the audience going crazy for Maiden and Saxon, and the Nuts guys couldn't understand what the all the fuss was about. That's the first time I really met Maiden. And then we met them a few more of the times, you know, in, like I say, in motorway services and here and there, and, you know, in London sometimes at the Marquee, I would run into Steve Harris and we were watching some bands or something. So, yeah, we knew them quite early on, actually, yeah.
Yeah. Are you keeping in touch? I guess, yeah, you supported them for a tour in the 80s, didn't you?
Yeah, we did. We did the our Pan and the Glory tour with them. They were on, I think it was Peace of Mind, I think, their album. But anyway, two great albums. It was a great tour, actually.
Yeah.
With a band called Fastway opening.
Those were the days. But still today, in 2024, like 40 years after, you unleash this powerful album on us.
And monster. We released this monster.
It's a monster. And how do you keep going like this in your age?
Well, I think I'm just highly motivated and, you know, yeah, bring people along with me, really.
It seems like the...
I think that's the key.
Seem like the metal genre and rock in general just keep coming back and back and back, and it feels like nowadays it's coming back again like a huge wave, let's call it that, once more. Do you feel the same?
I think it's been coming back, you know, slowly over the last 10 years, and I think now it's sort of exploding a bit now. Things go around in cycles musically, I think. And you get, you get a 10, 12-year cycle. People go around, you know. I mean, a lot of the older fans are still there, and you get a lot of younger generation fans that join the basic army, you know, join the club. So I think it regenerates itself every so often. But I do think that, you know, a lot of it, the music has a lot to do with it. I think, you know, you get a few bands who are the leaders, like, you know, say Saxon, Maiden, Priest, will keep releasing great albums, and that keeps the movement. I think that keeps the movement relevant.
It's so amazing with this Norwegian festival. You're going to play there this summer, Tons of Rock.
Yes.
It's getting bigger and bigger and bigger, and the crowd is amazing. And what can we expect in June when you arrive to Oslo?
Well, you can expect the set to start with Brian Blessed and Hellfire and Damnation. That's what you can pretty much guarantee that that's what we'll start the set with. But yeah, it's all part of our Hellfire Damnation world tour, you know. So, we're going to do four or five new songs, and, you know, we'll probably do some of the big hits like Power and Glory and Wheels of Steel and, you know, songs like that, really. Princess of the Night, Denim and Leather. But yeah, the emphasis will be on the new album, I think.
And Hellfire and Damnation. I think it's my new favorite Saxon song, actually. And,
great.
Yeah, it's really great. And I got this, I have to ask this, every guest must answer. Do you have a favorite Iron Maiden song?
The favorite Iron Maiden song?
Yeah.
They've got so many great songs, haven't they? They're like us. So many great songs.
Dave.
I think probably my favourite song. I don't know. We did Top of the Pops with Maiden, and they had Running Free on there. But I think probably my favourite song is 666, Number of the Beast.
Okay.
I think that's such a great song, lyrically and musically. And I think that's the song that broke them worldwide, really.
So you remember that evening, Top of the Pops with Running Free?
Yeah, I remember it. Yeah, I'm running free. Yeah, it was good. I mean, they were doing that, and we were doing something like 747, or maybe it was Banfield. I can't really remember. But we were big, quite big rivals back in the day, I suppose, musically. You know, we were both neck and neck in the charts. It was a good time, really.
Yes, it's number one. It's Top of the Pops.
Who said heavy metal music was dead? They come from West Ham. Their name is Iron Maiden. And they got something which they're doing live in the studio for you. It's called Running Free.
But you were friends backstage.
Yeah, we've always been friends.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we first time I met Bruce Dickinson, we played a show late 70s with Samson. I remember.
Yeah.
That must have been 1979, 1980. We played a big show with Samson. So, you know, we'd met Bruce before Maiden, actually.
Han visste det ikke ennå, men noen av de beste barndomsminnene han skulle ta med seg videre I livet var dagene hjemme syk fra skolen med bestefar som barnevakt. Ikke det at det var så innmari gøy å være syk, men han fikk bestille McNuggets til lunsj og se på TV I sofaen mens bestefar leste papiravisa ved siden av. Og det nettopp sånne dager som betyr mer enn det virker som der og da. For sånn livet. Og McDonald's bare en liten del av det, tross alt.
You're listening to a podcast. I'm Bruce Dickinson. You're not. And you're listening to Gamal Maiden.
How is traveling on tour today compared to back in the days, in the 80s?
Well, nothing's changed. It's just the same buses and the same airplanes. They may be a little bit quieter and a little bit, more fuel efficient, but it's the same. It's the same bullshit, really. Waiting at airports to get on, then to get off, and then, you know, going to the venue. But I think the traveling side of things, if you're traveling and meeting people and, you know, doing interesting things, you know, if you're going into the Amazon jungle, you know, in Brazil or something. But generally, most of the time, you're from the airport to the hotel to the dressing room.
Yeah.
And then the dressing room to the hotel to the airport. So that side of it's not very glamorous, but it's what you have to do. If you want to tour the world, then obviously you have to put up with all the traveling and things. It's pretty much like all professional people that travel around the world, whether you're an actor or a model, or a rock and roll band, you know, the traveling and the jet lag is all part of it, you know.
Yeah. I guess with your interest in history, you got to go to the Viking medieval museum when you get to Oslo.
Yeah, I've been to a couple of places in Norway. There's a place by the beach with a big sword in it. A big sword there, and there's a museum there.
Yeah,
I've been to that one, but I don't know which one that one is. But I've been there. We played a show there once. And that was pretty interesting.
Yeah, that would be if we were three swords.
It's on the coast. Yeah,
it's near Stavanger Hafrsfjord, I think it's called.
And, probably, yeah. I'd like to see the there's a Viking longboat up there, isn't there? Restored.
Yeah.
In one of the museums. I'd like to see that. You never know. If we get time, maybe I'll go and have a look.
The brutal history of Norwegians and the Brits.
Well, actually, yeah, the Norwegians, the Danish, and the Swedes are all the same, weren't they? I think, back in the day. But, you know, it's history, isn't it? It's really, really, really interesting.
Yeah, and then go to the hotel room and make a new song about it. So we can... Can we expect another album after this one, you think?
Yes, I think so. I think so. We've got plenty of ideas still around. You know, so, I've got a few ideas, actually.
Looking forward.
So we'll see where they go.
Biff, it's been a pleasure, and thank you so much. Good luck with the release and the tour.
Yeah, thank you very much, and yeah, I'm pleased you like the album, and we'll see everybody at the Toronto Rock. That'll be great.
See you there.
Yeah, yeah. See you, mate. Bye.
Thank you so much. Bye, bye.
Okay. Bye, bye, bye.
Gammal Maiden med Torkel Torsvik, en podcast fra Radio Rock.
Det ble jo riktig så hyggelig, kul fyr, Biff Byford I Gammal Maiden, en av rivalene til The Bruce og Co. på 80-tallet. Tøff den siste låta, sjekk den ut.
Du har hørt en podcast fra Podplay. En enklere måte å høre podcast på. Last ned appen Podplay, eller se podplay.no.